I've got an airplane sitting in a van in front of us.
I had dinner with five Republicans.
This is the Subcommittee on Human Services. This is February 24th, how the time flies. And this is a public hearing on 5503 Oregon Commission for the Blind today. We'll be hearing from the commission as well as having public testimony. Kim, you want to lead us through this a little bit?
Yes. Chair Bates, members of the committee, today, as you said, we have a public hearing for SB 5503, which is the appropriation bill for the Oregon Commission for the Blind. And today you have Daisha Johnson, the executive director of the commission, and Pratik Dujari, the commission's chair, here to tell you, give you an overview about the commission.
Thank you. Would you like to come up and address the committee, please?
Yep. Cool.
Sounds
you.
Is this me?
Please introduce yourself for the record and begin your presentation. Thank you.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Daisha Johnson. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Commission for the Blind, and joining me this morning is the current chair of the commission, Mr. Pratik Dujari, and I'll have him introduce himself for the record.
Hi, good morning, chairs and members of the committee. My name is Pratik Dujari. I'm the current chair of the Oregon Commission for the Blind since fall of last year. Professionally, I work as an engineer at Intel Corporation in Hillsborough. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Co-Chair Bates, Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. I'm Claire Clark from the Chief Financial Office.
For?
Excuse me?
Chief Financial Officer. You're from CFO, right?
Right, yes, yeah, sorry.
Not for the commission, you're the CFO.
Right.
Right,
correct.
Okay.
So my understanding, we're going to kick it off with the governor's chief financial office slides, and then we'll go into the agency slides.
Typically, we do the agency.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, again, this is Daisha Johnson, co-chairs, members of the committee. The Commission for the Blind is a very small executive branch agency. We are governed by a commission, a seven-member board, and the current chair is with us today, Mr. Dujari, and he's actually going to kick off the agency presentation for us this morning. So I will turn it over to him.
Good, thanks. Daisha, are you controlling the slides?
I am indeed.
Okay, great. So let's move to slide number two. I'm going to review the first couple of slides here. The first slide is the mission statement slide. So just to recap, the Oregon Commission for the Blind is chartered to enable blind Oregonians, partially and totally blind Oregonians, for successful inclusivity in society by making proactive and informed choices. And there are three primary ways we work on that is through gainful employment, be a productive member of the society, through independent living skills, so all, you know, groceries, day-to-day tasks, everything they can accomplish independently, and social self-sufficiency. So this comes not to live in a vacuum, but be out there, have a good personal life, and be socially self-sufficient. The following bullets on the same slides kind of elaborate on some specific areas of how we do it at the commission. When Daisha reviews her detailed slides, she will review each of those in more detail. But to briefly, vocational rehabilitation, voc rehab, that takes the biggest chunk of the agency resources. And this essentially teaches clients all various a whole diaspora of independent living skills, including job interviewing skills, and on technology, which is a huge part of us getting and staying employed today. Then there's the independent living program, which focuses on senior citizens to make sure they are able to take care of their needs and live independently in a gainful way. Next, we have the transitionary youth program. So this is pretty critical. There's something called a summer work education program every year that we host in Portland and Salem. This allows, this puts teenagers, high schoolers through a real life work experience and independent living situation, which has been really empowering for them. And this enables them to set out a plan to either get employed, find employment, secure employment, or go on to college or university. Also, there are other programs as this slide indicates. People who have been employed and start becoming visually impaired, losing their vision for some reason or the other. The commission also, the agency also enables them through training to retain that employment or secure new employment or go back to the place where they've employed before in a successful manner. And I would say finally, the last thing is public education is huge. Because all these things are very critical that I just listed. Social and public perception of blind people, whether it be people at the grocery store on the street or at a place of employment, I think educating them is a very important part. So there are various avenues we do that through City of Portland's transportation committees, going to different schools, K-12 schools, to just educate the children, for example, and to various professional networking events throughout the Portland metro area. And if you move to slide number 3, I'm not gonna spend too much time on slide number 3, but essentially this is like the org structure for the Commission for the Blind. And this org structure very closely reflects and complements and is designed to optimize the various services I just listed in the previous slide. With that, I'll pass it on to Daisha, who can review the more details. Thank you.
Thank you, co-chairs and members of the committee. Again, Daisha Johnson, executive director. The agency structure is fairly simple, as the previous slide indicated. We have a vocational rehabilitation program, and in essence, this program, the majority of folks that we serve are individuals who have lost vision as adults. They have a work history, and they typically need to not only acquire the alternative skills related to blindness, but they need to be able to adjust to the vision loss and then be able to return to employment. So our vocational rehabilitation program has a combination of specialized vocational rehabilitation counseling staff and rehabilitation instructors that provide a combination of the adaptive skills training and the necessary rehabilitation counseling and guidance required to help these folks go back to work. We also have in the rehabilitation services program, the majority of which, the largest part of it, is an older blind independent living program. This program actually serves about the same number as our vocational rehabilitation program, but it's a very small in comparison. It's a program that basically helps seniors, the majority of which are well over the age of 75, who acquire vision loss that is largely age-related, mostly due to macular degeneration. And these seniors desire, like all of us, to remain independent in their homes and communities. And we have those same specialized rehabilitation teachers that will go out into folks' homes and provide them with the necessary training for them to be able to remain fully independent and safe in their homes and communities. We also have... one of the things that makes the Commission for the Blind unique is we operate the only residential and commuter training center for people who are blind in Oregon. That's housed in the Portland metropolitan area. So it's basically in two formats. It's for folks who live outside of the Portland metropolitan area to come to Portland and live in apartments that are a couple of blocks away from the agency headquarters. They come and they actually, like any education setting, they attend classes, and those classes look like Braille instruction, meal preparation, cane travel, adaptive computer technology training, and personal management. We teach very practical skills, including how to match your socks, how to sew on a button. We teach basic skills like how to pay your bills, all of those skills in preparation for folks to go back to work. For individuals who live in the Portland metropolitan area, they take public transportation to the training center to attend the same type of classes. We also are the state licensing agency for what's called the Business Enterprise Program, and this is a relatively small program, but an important part of what we do because it's one of the most visible aspects of the agency, in which individuals who are blind, who participate in the vocational rehabilitation program that the agency has, who desire to go into public food service vending operations, are licensed by the agency, and they run small businesses in the form of cafeterias, vending operations, coffee carts, and other types of snack stands around the state of Oregon. So the next slide, we'll go into vocational rehabilitation, how they're delivered. In essence, the piece for us is when folks lose their vision, the majority of the individuals that come to us are referred through the medical providers that they are seeing them. And at the point when they're determined that their visual condition, their legal blindness, is such that it cannot be restored, they typically refer us folks to us for rehabilitation services. So individuals come to us, oftentimes they've had a period of unemployment due to their vision loss, and our rehabilitation counselors will meet with them and develop a very specialized, individualized plan for returning to employment. The majority of that, which makes us unique, is that first phase of the rehabilitation process is actually acquiring the independent living skills related to blindness before they actually think about returning to work. The other aspect that Mr. Dujarry mentioned during his portion of the presentation is we offer a very specialized summer work experience program for in-school youth. And this program is something that's going to be emphasized in the future under the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, which is our federal legislation. However, we've been offering it for many years, and this is one of the most powerful indicators of future employment as adults for any youth, but particularly youth who experience vision loss, to have early work experience opportunities. So we have those offered. We have a program for individuals with significant disabilities here in the Salem, at the campus of the Oregon School for the Deaf, which is a very intensive job coaching model. And we also offer a more independent living opportunity and work experience on the campus of Portland State University each summer. The next thing, which is a major policy area of concern for us at this point, because of the growing aging population in our state and actually around the country, is our older blind independent living program. And this program really does partner with other community providers to learn of folks who are experiencing vision loss, and we actually will go out to folks' homes and teach them very basic skills in order for them to be able to continue to live independently. And one of the most powerful parts about this model is, for example, if we can teach folks how to label their medication and continue to do that independently, that saves a home health care nurse from having to come in and administer medication for them. If we can teach independent meal preparation that teaches those skills, then someone doesn't have to have in-home meals prepared and delivered to them. It's a significant cost savings to the state. One of the most powerful aspects of that is it actually will be one of the major indicators for a family to decide whether or not a senior needs to be sent to any type of higher levels of care. Because of that vision loss, oftentimes families are concerned about individual safety. And if it is just their vision loss, it is something that with the right skills and training, folks can be very independent and very safe at home. The next slide talks a little bit more in detail about the Orientation and Career Center. This is a very important aspect of what we do. It is an intensive training rehabilitation model that goes through every phase of the adjustment to vision loss process and really helps that individual rebuild their toolkit in order to be able to fully function independently as someone who is blind. And this is oftentimes the first step on the rehabilitation process for folks who are returning to work. And what we find is individuals will come to the training center and they have no idea about, you know, the possibilities of going back to work. And over the period of acquiring the skills related to blindness, what will happen is their world will reopen up and they will be able to say, you know, I could return to my previous occupation. I worked on the computer. Now I know how to use the computer again. There's no reason why I can't go back to work. And we see that happen time and time again. And it's really the importance of having not only the specialized staff available to them to have that skill training, but also there's a significant amount of rehabilitation power that happens when you actually are able to interact with other people that are experiencing vision loss at the same time. One of the things about having such a low incidence disability such as blindness is it is not uncommon for you not to know anyone else who is blind unless you actually have an opportunity through a support group or some type of other significant contact place like the Commission for the Blind. So meeting other people who have been there before and have been successful in accomplishing employment and other types of full independent living opportunities is a really significant component of the rehabilitation process. Also, this is a slide that talks about that business enterprise program that we mentioned. This is a program that does license and provide employment opportunities for folks who are blind who actually desire to enter the food service and vending occupations in Oregon. And the next slide talks about the environmental factors. Really, the important thing for the committee is for us, we really want to emphasize that we are the in essence, the only game in town for providing rehabilitation services for adults here in Oregon. So our services, although has a very small footprint from a budget perspective for our stakeholders, it's a very key critical service. And one of the things that I've always appreciated is our stakeholders consider the Commission for the Blind their agency.
We have a question on the panel.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When you say that each year approximately 1,950 people become legally blind, do you have a sense of how many, what the age range is at? Is that mostly older people who are experiencing macular degeneration, for example, or are there younger people, or how much of that is genetic? Could you talk a little bit about that, please?
Thank you, Senator Steiner Hayward, committee co-chairs. The answer to that question is that the most significant increase of age is age-related macular degeneration. And for what we know about the working age is that the primary cause of blindness in the working age population is due to diabetic retinopathy. But the majority of folks that we're serving from a policy perspective, that 1950, we don't have it broken down specifically, but it's certainly the incidence of blindness is largely age-related.
Follow up, if I may, please, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Two things. First of all, I would appreciate at some point seeing something of a breakdown on that in a sense of the causes of blindness in Oregon, because as we think about trying to prevent that, then the more we know, the better. The other issue is that you then say only an estimated 19,500 Oregonians are blind, which means that that's basically a 10-year accumulation. Would suggest that the lifespan after one becomes blind is pretty limited. Is that, again, do you think because of age, or is it because of complications of diabetes, or what?
These statistics, Senator Steiner, we co-chairs of the committee, these statistics we acquired from a national statistics center. And what I understood in talking with the statistician was that typically it is age-related, where folks who live long enough will eventually acquire age-related eye conditions. So what happens is that folks will... Of the 19,500 folks will pass away, so that number does kind of grow steadily but slowly, because folks will acquire eye conditions, but then they will also
I think
folks
suffice
will
it
pass
to say
away.
That we need to provide some form of Pareto of this with different windows of ages, and I
yes.
think we'll probably be able to look at that, because that exactly aligns, you know, with the employment and all the other.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Scope and the directive of the agency. That's a very relevant question.
And one more quick follow-up, if I may.
Follow-up.
Thank you so much. And then you say unemployment for individuals who are blind approaches 70%. Is that in the age span of people who are blind and who are also considered, you know, sort of the 18 to 65 range of normal employment? Or is that including the entire population of almost 20,000 people?
Senator Steiner Haywood, co-chairs, members of the committee, you are correct. That is a national statistic, which is not unique to blindness. It's estimated that 70% of people with disabilities in general experience unemployment. But absolutely, that is something that we can flesh out a little bit more.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Senator Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and not just for this agency, but for me, it is very helpful when you come before us. And I appreciate the national data, but you know, I'm very interested in what it looks like in Oregon. And so, for those who are listening in, if you still have to make future presentations, just to flesh out how it relates to Oregon, and that would be extremely helpful for me. Thank you.
And Daisha, I want you to know that at 9:30, I'm going to close off your testimony, because we have testimony from the public I want to get in.
Okay.
Okay, we're no plan to come back again on the commission unless we really have to.
Fair enough. We'll move on then. The budget drivers, and these are really issues that are not necessarily unique to our agency. But certainly jobs requiring higher technical skills, that is something that folks who are blind who want to go back to work also face. We have mentioned also talking about the need for the specialized services and the demand for services for seniors who are acquiring vision loss. I wanted to point out yesterday during the subcommittee, you talked with the Department of Human Services about the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act. We are also a specialized workforce partner in that act, and so that passage of that law that happened in July of 2014, and it's... future regulations will also affect our agency. This slide is just to give an introduction. I'm relatively new to my role as executive director, and one of the first things that I did in collaboration and with leadership from the commission is looking at an operational framework in which to move the agency forward. That has a combination of really looking at what resources that we can use from centralized government. Currently, we're leveraging shared services in the area of information technology and human resources. We also had onboarded a process of doing risk assessment and internal audit work to help the agency get feedback on how our operations are going. We did a very intentional effort of strategic planning and aligning with the overall 10-year plan for government. One of the things about our agency that I think is somewhat unique is in the area of how invested our stakeholders are, as well as our work is very intensive, and we really rely on having very engaged, specialized staff that provide the direct services to our clients. So we really focus on getting good feedback from not only our employees, but also making sure that we have a regular communication loop with stakeholders on how our services are going. The last area that we'll kind of cover the next slide is we are the smallest agency to onboard a system called the Now Management System. It's based on Lean principles, which really, over the last 2 years, we have done a concerted effort, and my apologies for the size of the font on this. It is a process where we basically operated, mapped out everything from the operation to the supporting processes of the agency, and created key outcome measures to help us know how we're performing as an organization. And this was a significant change in the culture of the agency, and it really allowed us to, one, think about effective and efficiency in terms of delivering the services that we do. It also is very, it's a very engaged staff model, in that staff are actually, as the subject matter experts, very involved in the process of helping improve services.
If I may just add to that really quick, I just would like to reiterate that I think the current board, the commission members, Desha, the executive director, and the managers report to her at the agency. I think we all feel that this is, strongly feel that this is a milestone for the agency, where, as Desha mentioned, this is a very quantifiable, measurable process. And the outcomes and different steps of the process are very quantifiable and measurable, as opposed to being qualitative. So I think it's a huge milestone. It's I'm pretty excited.
When he gets done.
That's right.
Sure.
Mr. Dirari, are you through?
There's a question from the committee.
Oh, we have a question. Was it Representative
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Very
kind
hand,
of
sorry.
You to recognize me down here, on the far end, especially on your left.
Yeah, so, hard to believe that you're on my left.
But I got your back. Okay. So, all right. So, my question, since you brought it up, and you mentioned outcome measurements, am I to get this as I look at this chart? This whole piece down here is your outcome measurements that you're measuring.
Representative Olson, committee chairs, members of the committee, this process, the question is whether or not those outcome measures, we actually have a total of, I believe, 85 measures that are addition, they're outcome measures and also process measures. And, you know, historically our opportunity for improvement is in our processes, and to make sure, as we're an agency who's really managing resources that are not enough to go around, is making sure that our processes are not only leading to the right outcomes, but being as effective and efficient as possible. So we have put in place a series of outcome and process measures to make sure that the business is running effectively and efficiently.
Cool. Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. So what data have you developed over the years then to determine whether or not you're even being successful at accomplishing any of these? I get an outcome measurement something fierce, so I'm just curious. 85 is a lot.
Maybe I can help out a little bit. I cheated and looked at this before. Can we go to slide 16 real quick? You want to talk to us about the reduction of time for applications? And this is a real measure here. Okay, I think that's what the committee is looking for, a real measure of what you're doing. There's three slides saying all wonderful things you're doing, but what I want to see is the outcome. I think that's what Representative Olson wants to see. I kind of cheated and looked ahead, so I did the last night, so go ahead.
Thank you, Representative Olson, co-chairs, members of the committee. To speak to your question about what they actually mean, this is an example of how we've actually made a difference. Historically, the agency has really looked at measures from a compliance perspective, and, for example, the application process, the federal government allows you 60 days to eligibility. And if you don't complete the eligibility within 60 days, you actually can extend it with agreement from the individual applicant. This process has really challenged us to look at what is that customer desire of the eligibility process? And that person who has lost vision really wants to know that they can get our help as soon as possible. And so this is an example of what we've done to drive performance process improvements. In quarter one, 2014, 18% of the applications were in excess of 60 days. We were still meeting the federal requirement because we had extended that in accordance with the regulations. However, that meant the 18% of the time, people who were blind were not hearing from us for at least 2 months that they were getting our services, and sometimes it took longer than that. So the power of this process was in quarter one, 2015, no applications were taking longer than 60 days. And in actuality, we reduced the average processing time from 43 days to 26 days. Right. So we're really talking, and this was a very powerful shift from a very consumer-focused organization to really take a look at it, not only from an efficiency standpoint, but what is actually that end-customer desire? And that really, staff got very motivated around making sure that folks who need that answer are getting it as soon as possible. And yesterday during your subcommittee, you talked with the Department of Human Services about the change under the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act of plan processing time and the requirement for that to be reduced to 90 days. The current effort underway that is just now getting kicked off is that we're going to focus on reducing the time from eligibility to the development of an individualized plan for employment. Currently, we're at right at 180 days, which is similar to the Department of Human Services, and we are our target will be to reduce it well below the 90 days.
You know, question, the Mr. question Chair, representative.
You know, I appreciate that. And to see a reduction from 43 to 60 or 26 days is pretty dang good. So, is there a model out there? Just follow up with that, Mr. Chair. Is there a model anywhere nationally that ever considers the economic savings involved in that type of effort?
Representative Olson, co-chairs, members of the committee. There is, we do some economic saving models from how much we save in terms of cost savings to the state. But your question, I think, was specifically whether or not there was any cost savings to reduce that time. And my answer would be we have not done that. Our objective really for us is there's not enough resources to go around, and so what we've tried to do is target where the efficiencies are so we can really focus on getting to the right outcomes for customers and spending our time there.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, just to stop for a second here, Senator Winters and Representative Olson have actually made a point. I hope other people listening to this, we often get going through page after page of what you're doing, but we want outcomes. When you can show us outcomes like this, then what you're doing to get there is, while it's still relevant, it's not as relevant as getting outcomes. We're going to be looking at the Oregon Health Plan here pretty quick. If they could get their people enrolled in OHP in 26 days, it was like a miracle. You could be on the phone with them for 26 days waiting to talk to somebody. Okay? So what you're doing here is really important, and we appreciate it. But it's the key question, and Senator, Representative Olson and Senator Winters, I appreciate you bringing that up. I hope others are listening, because that's the kind of information the committee really needs. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Right. The speaking of outcomes, here's some expected outcomes. What we're hoping to be able to do is achieve employment outcomes for approximately 200 Oregonians who are blind. We're really proud at our average hourly wage at placement. When we are placing individuals in jobs, the Rehabilitation Act really challenges agencies to try to find career jobs. And our average wage at placement has typically been well over the minimum wage. And in 2014, it was over $24 an hour, which is remarkable. Generally, it's actually and the for example, the previous year was 1739, and the previous year before that was 1791. So 2449 was an incredible year, but we're still proud that we try to place folks in living wage jobs so they can actually get off of benefits and support their family.
You know, I think I like to go through your program. I'm not good at matching my socks. I don't pay my bills in time. I can't see my buttons. And that $24 an hour sounds pretty good.
Tell me about it. Certainly beats what we're making up here, Mr. Chair.
I knew somebody was going to say that. She said it certainly beats what we're making up here.
Yeah, that's true.
The next slide talks about the expected outcomes in the Older Blind Independent Living Program. This is a program that is a particular policy interest for the agency.
Mr. Chair, and before she moves on to that, just a quick question,
Senator
Mr.
Winters?
Chair. When, go back to your the former slide and where you your expected outcome number of service, and I'm assuming 1445.
That 17.
Yes, slide number, that's all services, is that correct?
Senator Winters, co-chairs, members of the committee, that would be expected for the vocational rehabilitation program itself.
You know, Mr. Chair, can I, one more time, we got to go back. I can't help. I've just tried to Google, see, you mentioned earlier about, Daisha, about regulations, new regulations that are coming, and I'm not familiar at all with any of that stuff, and I was just trying to Google it to see what's coming up on the regulations for the commission, but we've been struggling with that with some of the stuff that's happening right now with, aging people with disabilities and DD right now with some of the stuff that's coming from the feds. Could you kind of just enlighten me a little bit about what's going on there for the blind?
Sure, Representative Olson, co-chairs, members of the committee. The Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act was passed in 2014. This was replaced the Workforce Innovation Act, which was passed in 1998. So it was a long time coming. And so yesterday you heard testimony about kind of the awaiting regulations. One of the unique challenges for the Commission for the Blind is that the regulations became in the requirements in the WIOA, the acronym, became in effect on passage, so we are required to comply with the law, which happened in July of 2014. Our biggest challenge in the program really is they have put a federal requirement to use 15% of the federal grant on what are called pre-employment transition services, which are specific services that will target in-school youth. And that will be a challenge for everyone in the nation, really, to look at programs and make sure that we're meeting that requirement of the 15% that is specifically to be utilized for youth. Another interesting thing that happened under the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act is part of our independent living grant is actually going to move from the U.S. Department of Education to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. So we will have, that's a unique challenge for the Commission for the Blind, is that we will have two federal agencies in terms of reporting and operational requirements to comply with. In essence, there will be a lot of new planning requirements. The Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act requires a unified plan for the workforce system, and the Commission for the Blind is a specialized workforce partner, so we will be part of that unified planning effort. That is a challenge for us, given that our small footprint and trying to be a participant and an active stakeholder in a statewide planning process with agencies that are significantly larger than us is an opportunity and a challenge both. And we also, under that process, will be looking at some specific timeliness measures around making sure that we're processing plans And, you know, the challenge for us when you have a lot goes into the assessment to making sure that you're actually doing some very concerted and thoughtful planning for folks. So when you actually develop a plan for employment that's specialized to that person, that you have good information that's driving those goals and services. And doing that in 90 days is going to be a challenge. However, you know, I do believe that the desire was to get services to folks as soon as possible, and that's something that we can certainly get behind.
Senator Olson?
So, just yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you. And that really helps. That's a nutshell version. So I guess just a follow-up question, Mr. Chair, on that is, how close were you to doing this already?
Mm-hmm. Representative Olson, co-chairs, members of the committee, how close are we to doing the 90 days?
Well, everything that you just described here, I mean, the 15% for the grant, services, income, youth, that type of home. I mean, where are we at with that right now?
Representative Olson, co-chairs, members of the committee, we will have to expend some additional dollars on youth. We hadn't actually broken out our services in that way. And the challenge is they're actually defining the services in new ways that we hadn't actually categorized before. So what we're hoping is that the federal regulations will actually give us a little bit more clarity as to what could or could not count for that 15%. And once we have that information, we'll have a better way of estimating how close we are to the 15%. But our objective is certainly a worthy investment, and we do believe that that is the highest indicator of employment for adults. The challenge for any organization when you have a statewide program is that it reduces your flexibility to meet the needs of all Oregonians who are blind, and we'll just have to work through that.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Winters.
Just a comment and also maybe an ask, because this particular, you know, the Workforce Opportunity Investment Act, which affects the Commission for the Blind and also DHS, it would be such a bad idea if we've got some time to actually really go through and starting with the actual intent of the legislation. Because the federally, it's not only in this arena, but in other arenas in health and human services, it's to begin to collapse all the silos that have existed across the spectrum of funding streams. Mm-hmm. Representative Olson, that's part of the mission of some of these broad sweeping pieces of legislation that have come out by the feds. The other part of the mission is to make certain that states and programs are actually working towards the objective of individuals be employed and able to sustain and assist themselves. So I'm just kind of putting a big broader piece on it, but you know, in reading it, I believe that that's probably was the intent coming out. In this case, you've got a 90-10 match where the feds are picking up 90% of the dollars. And, you know, and over in health and human services. So federally, I think that they're trying to push states in order to actually do a better job. So I think, Mr. Chair and others, it might not be a bad idea if just a little snapshot of that piece of legislation is shared with the members of this body.
I think that's a good idea.
So, Deja, can you get that to the committee and give it to us in written written testimony later? You've got 10 minutes to wrap this up, and I'm going to close you off. Sorry about that. But the committee can read the slides as well as anybody can, and I'd like to have your chance to have some interaction with the committee. And then I want to go to public testimony.
All right. Thank you, co-chairs, members of the committee. I will then conclude and allow the governor's office their time. I'd like just to turn to slide 21 that speaks to some of the committee's comments thus far. It's really worth emphasizing that vocational rehabilitation and later the Older Blind Independent Living Program are really good investments. If folks go back to work, Oregon's contribution is paid back in state taxes in approximately 4 months' time if you take the average cost of rehabilitation. And the federal contribution is paid back in taxes in less than 10 months. You'll see a lot of different measures around cost effectiveness in programs. And if folks go off of Social Security, the average savings is significant over a lifetime if you take kind of the average time in which they receive services. And then if they actually acquire health insurance as part of their job, there's a significant cost savings to the state. And in the Old and Blind Independent Living Program, it's significant if we can delay folks kind of going into higher levels of care by having just very basic teaching instruction. It's a significant cost savings to the state. And with that, I will conclude my portion of the presentation.
Senator Starhaven?
Really quick. You know, you just said something that I think is really important and that I think we don't hear often enough. We talk a lot, which I think is really, really important, about the importance of human dignity and the opportunity of giving every Oregonian the chance to work up to his or her potential and have a meaningful life. The reality is we have to be thoughtful about our budget as well, and I really appreciate your bringing very clear data on the cost savings associated with doing the right thing, right? Doing the right thing means helping people live independently, have meaningful work, be contributing members of society in whatever way they're capable, and you're doing a great job of that. But these data are really important because we do have limited resources. So investing in programs such as these that get people back to work, I just think we really need to focus on that, and I think I need to make sure committee members hear these things really clearly. I don't mean to pound this too hard, but this is important.
Thank you. Representative Kenny Kyer.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is partially a question, partially a comment, because I want to make sure that public testimony has an opportunity. So for any of you, it looks like you're serving roughly 10% of the people who are blind. You talked about 19,500 who are blind, and your services go out to roughly 1,500 or so. So I'm just curious about, you know, are the 90%, you know, doing fine? They have kind of the social support. You're getting to the ones that really need it. Or what is the outreach, particularly to communities of color, people with different languages, rural areas, do people know to get an application and seek support? So I have a whole question about what's happening to the other 90%, because what you are doing for the 10% and the kind of outcomes that you're getting look great. I think you're doing a great job. So I'm curious about that. And the other question, just in general, I know I've talked with several of you here before about diabetes. Any kind of feedback you can get to us about, you know, we have an increasingly growing population in the senior community, which is the major driver of blindness. But we also have, we just had a big hearing on diabetes, the growth of diabetes in our health committee yesterday, and that's certainly a significant driver of it, too. So any kind of connection that you have with prevention opportunities. So just two general comments, and I don't expect long answers because I really want to hear from the public as well.
So Representative Kenny Geyer, co-chairs, members of the committee, I will speak to the diabetes issue. We are on the end of the rehabilitation process, which we don't necessarily address prevention. We certainly have an opportunity to provide public education in related to what happens if diabetes progresses and that people experience vision loss. So we do that type of education so folks understand that diabetes does eventually lead to other complications that involve vision. And in relation to the 90%, your question and concern, so once individuals have the skills related to blindness, they would be able to work and fully engage in their community, and unless they experience some other kind of setback or something that required some level of intervention from us, they would be able to live independently without the involvement of the Commission for the Blind. Mm-hmm. I do believe that for most folks, they are aware of us. We are constantly challenged, though, when and it haunts us when we hear, we didn't know anything about the Commission for the Blind, and it's, you know, I lost my vision 2 years ago and I just stumbled across you. We've tried to maintain a very a solid footprint in terms of a web presence. We have an information guide, and that's something that we're constantly challenged with, is trying to make sure that when folks need us, that they are aware that we're out there.
And thirdly, I would also add that there's also subjective, there are real fears amongst blind Oregonians. Most of Oregon is like outside the, I suppose the Willamette Valley is like very rural. So even if they've heard of the Commission for the Blind, that doesn't necessarily mean that they'll be willing to become clients of the Commission for the Blind. And that's part of the public outreach and what Daisha just mentioned. So there are a bunch of different factors which contribute to that number.
Follow-up, Kenny Geyer.
Well, just a quick follow-up. I hope that you're doing a close connection with 211. That's one of the avenues through which perhaps people, as we expand that statewide and really try to fortify that, that could be one of many links.
Yeah. Yes.
Thank you.
Good point.
Chair Nathanson.
Thank you. just a very quick technical question. In some other program areas that we hear about, there's a noticeable cost difference between assisted living and foster home care. And I'm noticing on this slide there's very little difference in the savings for those two different kinds of supported living. And so I'm just wondering how you arrive at the numbers, and it doesn't have to be a long explanation. Our LFO analyst can follow up with you later if it's too technical, but I am a little bit curious about that.
Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, I will double-check those figures. My understanding is we got it off of a rate table that is published by the Department of Human Services, but I certainly can verify those numbers and get that to LFO.
And a quick follow-up, if you don't mind.
Yes, follow-up.
Okay. Can you also provide information on whether there's a significant difference in the level of satisfaction of placement for in people who are using the Commission for the Blind in assisted living versus foster home care? Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. So I'm going to ask CFO to come in now, and you've got 5 minutes. Have a good time.
I'll just get started while Daisha's pulling up the slides. Oh, there you are. So, Co-Chair Bates, Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, my name is Claire Clark, and I am from the Chief Financial Office. This morning, I'll give a brief presentation on the governor's budget for the Oregon Commission for the Blind. The governor's budget for the commission provides the resources to ensure that the commission is able to leverage all available federal funds and is able to expand its services to that older blind population. The commission is situated within the jobs and economy outcome area of the 10-year plan for Oregon. It contributes to this outcome area by supporting a dynamic and resilient workforce. It also provides services to allow individuals who are blind to remain living at home in their communities. The governor's budget for the commission includes investments that support Oregonians who are blind across the lifespan by ensuring they have the skills to lead full and productive lives. In developing the commission's budget, the focus was on investing in measurable positive outcomes for those it serves and investing strategically to avoid long-term costs. The budget also invests in addressing the growing need for the commission's services as the population in Oregon grows and the number of people with vision loss increases. So on this chart, you can see that the Commission for the Blind is primarily supported by federal funds, which are shown in blue. These are leveraged by other fund and general fund contributions. The federal match for the commission is as high as nine federal dollars for every $1 in state contributions. And to access these federal funds, the commission is subject to maintenance of effort requirements. The commission's other funds come from a variety of sources. They include donations made directly to the agency. They also include contributions from licensed blind managers of food service and vending programs or operations in public buildings. So these managers contribute 11% of their net earnings to support that program, the Business Enterprises Program. The commission also receives other funds from cooperative agreements with school districts or educational service districts. They receive compensation for the vocational rehabilitation and transition services they provide to students with blindness. So for 2015-17, the governor's budget for the commission is $16 million total funds. Of that, $2.7 million is general fund. Included in this budget is a request to restore general fund to historical pre-recession levels, and includes two targeted investments to avoid long-term costs. So to provide some context, during the previous two biennia, so 2011-13 and 2013-15, the legislature decreased its support, its general fund support to the agency, and asked it to draw down its bequests and donations fund to allow the state to balance the budget during those tough economic times. So currently, projections show that the bequests and donations account will be depleted by the end of this biennium, which is why the budget for the commission requests a restoration of these general funds. So restoration of these funds is projected to help the agency avoid a 15% reduction in the number of clients it serves.
Questions? This is Chair Bates. First question, is there a limit on federal funds in this program? Is it the block grant, isn't it? We have to maintain maintain our part of the program. Maintenance of effort.
Co-Chair Bates, committee members, that is correct.
Have we reached that level?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. No questions? Thank you for your presentation. This is a, for those of you who haven't been here as long as some of us others have, this has been a commission that has struggled the last 10 to 15 years. About 4 to 5 years ago, it started its big turnaround. There are no major problems I know of. I congratulate you on running a good commission, doing a great job, and I'm hoping that as we hear public testimony, that is backed up by people who are coming in to talk to us. But thank you for your presentation. Seeing no questions, I'd like to ask you to step aside for a moment, and let's have our first public testimony start immediately.
And
if
thank
I
you
say,
okay.
If I say names wrong, please forgive me. Mara Byers, Deborah Ryan Shipley, and Terry Stroshine. And as you come up, I'm going to warn you that I'm the time master today. We have to be on the floor pretty quickly here. So at about 10 o'clock, we're going to stop public testimony. I've done the math on this, which is probably pretty sketchy, but you each got about 2 minutes. And I'll warn you when that time is coming to an end so we can get everybody who is here that wants to testify in front of the committee has a chance to do so. So we will lead off by whoever wants to speak first. Just introduce yourself to the committee and give your testimony, please. Your microphone's right in front of you. Just go ahead and speak into them.
My name is Marja Byers, and I was the first name called, so I'll go first.
Okay.
I am a client of the Oregon Commission for the Blind, and I am now currently the Executive Director of Blind Skills here in Salem. When I came to the commission, I had lost my vision, I had had a work injury, and within 6 months, I lost my job. And it was a career that I identified myself with, and it was extremely difficult. With the help of the commission, I was able to see what skill sets I do have, many transferable skills. And it was not an easy road, but I have gained so much by working with the Commission for the Blind. Orientation and mobility training is absolutely critical. That's learning how to use a white cane. It is the key to independence. And as the executive director of Blind Skills, I have had the opportunity to see local Salem people who are coming to our office, and on average right now we're seeing about one new person a week, and they are pretty much all older blind independent living clients. And it's very, very frustrating. I knew this was going to happen. I had a new person to our organization come in last week, and in talking with him, he was saying that he's gotten to the point where he sees so poorly that he's not using a white cane. He's never been trained how to use a white cane. So he's not going out in public. As I spent time with him in his home, helping him set up some of the really basic things like marking appliances, talking about adequate lighting, talking about color contrast. And we had the opportunity to come downtown together. We had a meal together, and he came to our support group. I came to the understanding that this man has basically been in his house for 2 years, except for the times that he has friends come over to pick him up to go out for a meal and to get his grocery shopping done. He has become totally reclusive, and he doesn't want to be. He wants to be engaged. And in order for him to be engaged, we need more funding and more staffing for this independent living older blind population, because they are growing. And when you hit somebody like this who doesn't have relatives in the area, he's got a few friends, he's pretty much on his own. And it's so distressing to me to talk to people like that. He had the opportunity to be with me to see how you can be a blind person and still remain completely independent. It was an absolute revelation to him. And I am hoping, with the legislature's help, to get more people to help these older blind people gain the skills that they need to remain independent and engaged in our communities. Thank you
for your testimony. I think you're identifying a growing problem we're going to deal with. Senator Steiner Hayward brought it up earlier. I'm going to just call out your name, if I could, to maybe move things along. Deborah Ryan Shipley?
Yes.
And I do.
I was born with myopic degeneration, and when I was really young, I lost the vision in my left eye, but I retained it to a degree in my right eye. What it is it's your eye, instead of being round, it's a football shape, and the retina gradually just frays like a rope. And a year and a half ago, I lost my husband, and he was my eyes. I haven't gone any place. I stay home unless somebody comes and takes me. And now, going to the commission, I've learned so many things that I enjoy doing, and I feel more independent. I can now thread a needle, which is not a big deal unless you can't see, and I can read my own mail now with a K&B reader, which, instead of snagging whoever comes over to your house to read your mail, and I cook and can access recipes and have family gatherings. I can walk to the mall and pick up my own prescriptions. I can I take the bus into the commission now, and I've recently started taking the bus home. The pieces of my life are coming back together, and I'm starting to feel like a whole person again. Thank you all, and thank you for the staff.
And congratulations to you. What an accomplishment. Terry.
Yes, I'm Terry Storshine. I'm a 17-year resident of Beaverton, Oregon. And my 4 terms with the commission have given me my independence back, have reconnected me with family and friends, have help me be creative again, give me confidence, has given me confidence, and I feel capable again, to make it short. But when I was an infant, I lost my left eye due to a childhood cancer called retinoblastoma, and vision issues rarely gave me trouble growing up until 7 years ago, when the residual radiation that was left over from those childhood cancer treatments started attacking the blood vessels behind my left eye. But that condition was able to be managed through regularly scheduled shots of an anti-inflammatory drug. However, one day in June, 3 days after I finished my 15th year of teaching math at Jesuit High School in Portland, a bacteria got into one of those injection sites and ate my retina in a 3-hour time span. So as you can imagine, that next day was quite different. I couldn't use most of my appliances, my microwave, oven, dishwasher, washing machine, dryer, and thermostat, not to mention my iPhone, all have touchpad surfaces. I was really comfortable in my house, but walking, you know, if I opened the door, a trip to the mailbox was a journey. And I was able to make it through the first couple of months with the help of my family, my friends, my neighbors. And then I started taking classes at the commission in September of 2013. And very similar to Deb, here's what the commission taught me. Through mobility, I can not only step out that door, I can go past that mailbox and walk unassisted a mile to the nearest grocery store, to a good friend's home, or to the MAC station. And I feel very comfortable using TriMet to get to just about any destination within the Portland area because I've learned what questions to ask and what signals to look for or listen for in this case, you know. Mobility has given me back my independence. I'm learning Braille, and while I'm not proficient by any means, I know it's my ticket back into the math world. I've worked and increased my skills in technology, and I can use my iPhone again. The voiceover feature is a wonderful, it's my lifeline. On the PC side of things, I've learned enough to apply for graduate school. I have used Excel to compare and contrast the costs of different universities. I've used Word to write all those fun essays. Remember, I'm a math major, right? I use the internet to search for scholarships and Outlook to keep in touch with the different admissions coordinators. Braille and technology have reconnected me with my family, my friends, the world, and my future. Cooking again, I feel comfortable back in the kitchen. You rarely see a frozen meal in my house. And wood shop, I mean, you don't even think about how important that is. But not only did they send me home with a homemade nightstand, what it does, it's taught me, or I now have the knowledge, that with a little ingenuity, I can retain all of my hobbies, meaning gardening, quilting. I can find a way. So the creative side of me has come out through cooking in wood shop. And then I had a 2-term work experience in the technology lab. And here, that's where I learned that I am still capable of giving back to society. The instructors and the agency staff at the commission work tirelessly. I think you should double that budget, that line item. It's phenomenal. They lovingly and patiently guide us to reach our full potential. And with a varied clientele, they've mastered differentiated learning and would put most classroom teachers to shame by what they do. The commission also encourages us to create a community with our peers, and that also has been invaluable to me. My classmates and many of my instructors who are blind have been role models for me on how to live a fully independent life, a full life with blindness. So I just want you to know that the Commission for the Blind has been the best return on my taxpayer dollar, and I hope to invest in them again in the future. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, and I'm going to tell you, you're making me feel pretty inadequate. You guys have amazing lives.
Yeah.
Anthony, and I'm sorry about the names here, Baglia, Bill, Leela Ja, and John Francis.
Yes.
Would you go first, please?
Yes. Thank you, committee members. My name is Anthony Baglia. I live in Baker City in Eastern Oregon, and I've been a resident about 4 years. I was born with Stargardt's disease. Didn't really realize that I had anything wrong with my eyes until around the fifth grade, when all of a sudden the writing got smaller on the chalkboards and in the books. And then they had misdiagnosed me, and I'm from California, and I went to like a big clinic, Scripps Clinic, Green's Clinic, and these are world renowned, and they'd have 100 doctors come in and look at my eyes while they were dilated, and every one of them misdiagnosed me. I didn't find out until my late teens that what I actually had was Stargardt's disease. And it is similar to retina detachment, but now with technology, they can actually fix retina detachment with laser surgery. Well, mine, they cannot, because mine are like rust on a wire, and once it deteriorates, it's gone. I've been fortunate enough to where I haven't had a whole lot of vision loss since I was younger, but it is bad enough to where I turned 16, owned 3 cars, and then found out I could not drive. So that makes a young man very kind of angry at the world. And so I've had, you know, odd jobs here and there, hard labor, minimum wage. Found out, you know, that if I couldn't drive, and nobody wanted to hire me because I was an insurance liability, because I can't see, that, well, I'm disabled. And so I got on the SSI and Medicaid, and, you know, through the years, you know, I raised a daughter. I was a stay-at-home father. Well, my daughter's 19 now, and so I started looking for work. And I moved to Oregon 4 years ago, and by doing so, I went to the employment agency, found out I wasn't eligible to do most of any jobs there. But they said, well, you know, there's a lady that works with the Commission for the Blind. You should give her a call. And here I am. And now I'm going to the Commission. And since I've been going to the Commission, what I have learned with adaptive devices and the skills that they are teaching me, it just completely opened my world. I am studying for my GED now. That is incredible. And with the adaptive devices, I'm eligible to do, or able to do, most of the jobs that I wasn't even eligible to do. And, you know, and it is, there's no amount of money that can pay for the skills that I am learning there. I taught myself how to type in 5 weeks. I don't know if that's some kind of record, but to me, that's pretty incredible. it's amazing. I never wanted a cell phone or a computer because I couldn't see them. And now, that's all I can talk about. That's all I want. I'm actually thinking about studying on my own, you know, into a college and going into some type of computer career, because I think that would be incredible. Like I said, there is no amount of money that could pay for the education that I'm getting from this Commission for the Blind. And they're incredible there, and they've opened the whole world to me. And I will spend the rest of my life repaying what I've learned there, because it made that big of a difference to me. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Anthony. Bill.
Yes, thank you. I'm on the other end of the spectrum. I guess I'm pushing 82, and I have first come to realize I had a vision problem when I couldn't read the blackboard when I first went to school. And it's kind of deteriorated from then, but I still have always had some reasonable level of vision. At this point in time, I'm 20 over 2,000, and they've thrown away the eye chart, and now they count fingers from my feet away. But I have gone through school, bachelor's and master's in clinical psychology, and worked with difficult teenagers for a number of, 18 years, until back in those days they didn't pay anything for those kind of jobs. I mean, nothing. So I decided that I better do something with my life to make more money, because I had 4 kids growing up who were getting old enough they wanted to go to college. So I opened up a personnel service here in Albany, Oregon, actually, called Action Business Services, Inc. And the Oregon Business Magazine, at one point in time, a number of years back, recognized that we were a pretty successful organization. And we had an national executive search segment and a huge temporary help service. And they decided that we must be the best personnel service privately held in the Northwest. And so wrote that, so we believed them. And have gone on to have a very, very successful business to the point where we were ready to retire. So I sold our assets and have now been retired for 7 or 8 years and looking around for something to do that would be helpful to other people. So we started a low vision support group in Albany. And we actually didn't start it. Another person started, but with only 2 or 3 attendees each month, she gave up on it and asked us to take it over. So we did. And having my wife being a promotional person and with a good vision, we have always been able to promote and make things happen, which we then did, and turned out that we have gone from 2 people per month to highest, I think, was 28, and we're someplace in the 80 members, I think, in our, we call it the Mid-Valley Low Vision Support Group, and located in Albany, serving Linn County. We started out calling it Linn, but then everybody thought we were a county organization, so we decided to better change our name and do something different, doing the same thing but under a different name. So we, I passed out a, I'm an addict on listening to books, and the Commission for the Blind provides this little machine. It is a fantastic recorder, only it ran out of battery power. But I want the members of the committee there to see how many books are available to low vision people. And when you get to be 75 and 80 and above, you have a lot of time to sit around and twiddle your thumbs. So I have become a real, real reader of talking books. And I would like to see everybody who has not gotten involved with the Commission for the Blind and have problems and is getting bored, get some good books and listen to them. This is provided free. Books are all free. They send them to you. You stick them back in the box. They say that it came in, send it back to them. And they tell me that some people order 6 books at a time and then send them back as they finish each one. Well, I'm not that ambitious. I sometimes order 2 at a time. And these are really interesting. I mean, they're excellent books. And they cover every possible subject you can imagine. I happen to like politics. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. John?
Yes, I'm John Francis. I live in Dayton. I was a member. I worked for the Cooperative Extension Service until losing my sight some years ago. After Blind Commission help, I became a peer counselor for the Northwest Senior and Disability Services and also a member of their advisory committee. I'm a member of, I'm a Yamhill County mediator and take part in the mandatory mediations in small claims court. I also teach or am a coach for mediation in the school. My wife and I together operate 2 of those segments of Adopt a Highway Cleanup. In the past few years, my wife and I taught school in India for 6 months. We established a program for sewing at a rural school in Madagascar, and most recently took sewing machines over and set up a sewing project in a Tanzanian orphanage in Tanzania. All of this is being able to do all of these kind of things is in no small part due to information from the Blind Commission, and I think that money spent in the Blind Commission has a multiplier effect and affects a far greater group of people than just the people they deal with directly. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman. Okay, John, you made me feel completely inadequate now. Thank you very much.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, Senator Winters.
I just wanted to ask a question about the sewing machines in Tanzania, since I've gone over there several times and participated in water projects. Your sewing machines didn't happen to go to Rafiki, did they?
I beg your pardon?
Did your sewing machines go to a little village called Rafiki?
No, this was in a Maasai village south of Arusha.
Langasti?
Wow.
Cool. You guys can work that one out later.
Oh, really?
Been there, didn't do that.
Excuse me.
The last panel. Many of you meet, some of the committee members may need to go to four other places. We have our last panel coming up.
Well, I didn't know you had a last panel. I was just going to comment on that, the reading thing.
Thank you for your wonderful testimony. Thank you.
Excuse me. I would just like to add one thing that, and I said I was studying for my GED. I forgot to mention that it's through Bookshare, and I'm learning it on my iPhone. Mm.
Thank you.
Mm, that's great.
So,
that's
last panel is Art Stevens, Luanda Miranda, and Kathy Dominique.
Thank you, co-chairs, members of the committee. My name is Art Stevenson, and I'm the president of the National Federation of the Blind of Oregon Capital City Chapter. I've testified last year in front of this subcommittee under very, very different circumstances. The governor had cut the commission budget, was very disappointed in that, and I vowed that we would never have to do that again. And so we met with the governor, we talked about blindness issues, we talked about investing our tax dollars in helping blind people in Oregon become independent so that our money was well spent. And as you can see, the governor presented this legislature with a much better budget than he did last biennium. He believed that investing in blind Oregonians is better than just spending money supporting them. And so what I would urge this committee is to recommend to implement at the very least the governor's budget, at the very best what the Commission for the Blind requested, because then we're going to have more independent blind Oregonians, and we're taking care of a problem that's going to get worse, not better, and that's taking care of blind senior Oregonians so they can remain independent and live full productive lives. And that's what God intended, and we should help them in any way that we can. Thank you very much for the opportunity to provide this testimony.
Thank you for speaking to us. Luanda Miranda?
Hello, Mr. Chair and board members. My name is Luanda Miranda. I'm from Central Oregon, Prineville, Oregon to be exact. I am the chairperson for the Business Enterprise Program. I'm a very successful businesswoman through that program. I went blind at the age of 21 with no warning. I had flu symptoms, went into a coma, and I woke up 3 days later and I was totally blind, paralyzed from the waist down. I got over the paralysis, but not the blindness, and I'm totally blind. So I didn't have a job history at 21 years old, and I went to the Oregon Commission for the Blind, and they taught me independent living, which was, to label my kitchen, my products, my food, my medications, my washer, my dryer, my microwave, everything that you heard from the other people that were speaking, which is very important, to be able to live on my own and live within my house. Then the next step was to get outside of my house, which the Oregon Commission for the Blind helped me with mobility and taught me how to get outside and get around and take city transportation, which at that time I lived in Portland, not in Central Oregon, and public transportation. So I was married, and my husband and I had a business, and then we got a divorce, and he got the business, and I got the house and the mortgage payments. And I lived on Social Security, SSI, which to me I hadn't earned that money because I never really had the opportunity to work before I turned 21, enough to matter. So through the Oregon Commission for the Blind, I got training for the Business Enterprise Program, and like I said, I'm independent. I'm a taxpayer. I'm an advocate for blind people. I give back to my community instead of, taking from my community. I'm very proud of that. I'm very independent. And I do owe that to the Oregon Commission for the Blind, and I'm very grateful to them. They believed in me when I didn't believe in myself. My parents had never been around a person with vision loss, didn't know what to do. I had to practically fight them every step of the way. They didn't want me to get out on the streets because I'd get run over by a car and so on and so forth, and they even helped with that. And so I have a very successful life, and I'm a very fulfilling life, and I do owe that to the Oregon Commission for the Blind. And I thank you for this time to share.
Thank you for your testimony. Mm-hmm. Kathy Dominique.
Hi, that would be me. Thank you, committee, for giving me the opportunity to speak. I think Art and Lawanda have kind of pretty much said it all, but I will add my 2 cents, I guess. I too, am a member of the Business Enterprise Program. I run a snack bar and latte bar in the Multnomah County Courthouse called Coffee Court. I'm the mother of 4. One of my children was born with spina bifida. And so during that time, I did have to learn some medical things to take care of her. And I was met with skepticism from the doctors, but I was able to learn, range of motion, cast care, back brace care, even catheterization, and how to work out with her, how to us to be together like so she would work her wheelchair and I would help push her. We probably look like quite the pair. But I owe so much to the Oregon Commission for the Blind because I got to take training from the commission for my business, and I too am a tax paying person. I pay a lot of taxes, actually. But I just feel like it would be really great to see the governor's budget and even to see if we can get the Oregon Commission's budget approved. They do a tremendous amount of work. They have great, great staff instructors, everyone from the front desk to the everyone works really hard to provide good service. Executive Director Johnson is amazing, as is our Business Enterprise Program Director. And I guess that's all. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Committee, that is the end of our work. Any comments? Representative Booth.
I feel inadequate myself, but I wanted to say to the young man from Baker City, I still can't type, so good for him. And the guy with the from Albany, Representative Olson's, with the books. I do, and also Art, I guess you talked about books too. There's a thing called Overdrive you can put on your iPhone, and you can listen to them. And They do expire in the middle of the book, so be careful. So, but thank you for everybody who came. I'm totally sold. You had me way back at about 9:15. And I think that this is great. And, you know, this is one of the good days in this committee to hear from all of you and how successful this program is. Because I remember back when the big fight was about keeping the school. Yeah. So thank you for all you do and for coming today.
Representative Kenny Geyer.
I just want to echo that. The presentations from the commission and the governor's office were great, but hearing the testimony from people who took a lot of effort to come here was very, very compelling. So thank you so much for taking the effort and letting us hear about the impact on your lives.
Representative Wilson. Just amen, Mr. Chair. Yeah.
Thank you all for your testimony coming today. And I have to tell you that in a world where all we hear about is negative things and how bad things are, your testimony is more than uplifting. Thank you very much for coming today. We are adjourned.
Truly impressed.
He's a clinical psychologist.
Truly impressed.
He's a clinical psychologist.